This is the State of Things broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stacio. As part of our ongoing series, North Carolina Voices Studying High School, we're talking today about the inescapable reality of today's high school experience, technology, specifically technology outside of the classroom, in between classes, during lunch, after school, and late into the night using computers and mobile phones. The virtual communications frenzy involves instant messaging, text messaging, online chatting, blogging, and social networking portals such as MySpace.com. It's a phenomenon that has caught many parents off guard. Joining me in the studio today are Steve and Katie Marshall. Steve Marshall is a business psychologist, the father of 16-year-old Katie. Katie's a junior at Greenhope High School in Cary, North Carolina. Steve and Katie, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much.
Nice to have you here. Also joining me from San Francisco is Liz Perley. Liz is editor-in-chief of Common Sense Media. That's a nonprofit group that helps parents make informed decisions about their media and their children, the media that their children consume. Liz, welcome to the program.
It's a pleasure to be here.
Let me start with you. How much time are teenagers spending online?
Oh, they're spending a lot of time online. They're spending the equivalent of a full day of workday a week online, about more than 7 hours it averages out. And most of that is done in conjunction with other things. So they're not only online, they're also on their phones, and they're also watching TV or listening to music while they're online.
All right. So those are sort of the rough numbers. Katie Marshall, the pride of Greenhope High School, how much time do you spend online?
Way too much.
Yeah?
It's just one of those things where you're online and you know you could be doing anything else, but you just have to talk to that one person, so you have to wait a good hour or two online until they come on, or you just have to wait for that text message. And it really adds up. And on top of adding up, it's addictive, especially MySpace. You just get sucked into it, and you have to change your profile every day, and you have to comment that one friend who commented to you first. And it's crazy.
Okay, so fill me in as an old guy who does not have a MySpace account yet. What does all that mean? You have a profile online?
Okay. You get a profile, and you can say whatever you want about yourself. Like, some people go way too far with it and say, here's my phone number, here's where I live.
Wow.
It's crazy. And you can add friends as you go with the profile. You can have a top eight that says, these are my best friends, and they're better than you. And if you're in a fight with someone, you kick them off your top eight. If you break up, they're not on your top eight.
Wow.
There's a whole little section, an about me section, where you can say if you're single or dating or divorced or a proud parent, where you go to school.
You've got a profile.
I do.
All right.
I do. And then you can put pictures of yourself up as well. And people can comment on those as well if they're your friend.
So, Steve, you know about all this stuff.
Generally, yes.
So you think
broad idea.
Thank you.
So what do you think you know, and how do you feel about it?
What I think I know is how much time is spent.
Mm.
And what I also know is we've had discussions about how to stay safe.
Mm-hmm.
Those parts I'm aware of.
Because that is, I think, the first concern, the fact that mm-hmm. all this information is out there, and we know that there are people online who don't have the best intentions, and,
exactly.
and that's it. That has happened. Liz, is that when you deal with parents, you know, as part of Common Sense Media, is that their main concern about all of this?
Absolutely. And you know, parents know so little about what their kids are doing online that it creates an automatic knee-jerk reaction of fear anyway.
Mm-hmm.
And if parents spend a little more time going on to MySpace and some of the other places, the same way, you know, hey, as parents, we know how to drive, right? So when we teach our kids, we're coming from a place of informed experience.
Mm-hmm.
And I think if parents took the same attitude towards their kids' online behavior as they do towards their drinking and driving policies, I think they'd be a lot less concerned and a lot more helpful to their kids and build more trust and also safer behavior.
We're talking about online practices of high school students today. We're taking your phone calls at 877-962-9862. We'll also take your emails, sot@wunc.org. If you're a parent, are you concerned about your kids and what they're doing online? Have you come up with a regimen, a kind of a discipline? Are you at a complete loss? 877-962-9862, sot@wunc.org. Liz, by itself, it seems to me that in the abstract, we can't say that this is either a problem or not a problem, I would think. It's a question of
how much.
Well,
it's a reality.
Yeah.
Let's start with
yeah.
that. I mean, this is where our kids live. And, I mean, I've got a 12-year-old and a 15-year-old, so I'm in the thick of it on a personal, not just a professional level. And our kids live online. Our kids are going to continue to live on their text messaging and online and in all these places. And you know, any desire to put the genie back in the bottle, It's time not well spent. So sort of get with the program and let's make the best of this. But it really does matter what age your kid is using this stuff, because there are developmental stages to what's appropriate, what's not appropriate.
Katie, how old were you when you started making profiles? And
Oh, my goodness. Just the internet relationships in general really started in about sixth grade when I had no idea what I was doing. And do you remember Napster?
Oh, yeah.
They had... yeah, this is so...
Do you remember Napster?
No,
I heard that.
No,
you
I just...
remember Napster?
It's so...
What happened to it? I'm sorry, go ahead.
Well, when it was first starting, I had no idea what I was doing, really. I just, like, seen little episodes on Full House about not talking to people on the internet.
Right.
And so they had this thing. They had a chat room in Napster. And I made up this whole persona for myself that I was a 16-year-old boy, because that's what everyone else was saying they were. And I was, like, talking to random people when really I'm a sixth-grade girl who has no idea what she's doing. And just, yeah.
Well, let's deal, Liz, with just the let me ask you, Steve, about the safety practices. Mm-hmm. What have you come up with to deal with your sense of fear about, Katie's safety?
Well, two major areas, content and also the procedures. In terms of content, we talked about what can and cannot be placed on the internet, looked at some of the newspaper articles together about some of the legal ramifications that can happen when people are saying things about other people that are inappropriate. The other is we became fairly detailed about the amount of time and also use of the internet. We keep the internet-connected computer in the kitchen, and my wife and I have the password, and Kate asks us for it.
So you have actual control over the access.
Literally.
Yeah. How do you feel about that, Katie?
Good and bad. The only bad is that it's like, I really wish I could just use a computer right now, and I wish also that I could use my own discretion better and not sit on it for 5 hours straight. And with that lack of discretion comes the good, in which it's better that I can't use it all the time.
Some higher authority is telling you, use your head. Well, Liz, how big a problem is this for most parents? Do they feel terribly conflicted about imposing these kinds of restrictions?
This is just about as broad a range as you can have. We just concluded a national survey that'll be out in a couple of weeks. And it's very interesting. There are so many factors that play into how parents feel about this, part of which is how their kids are actually using it. I mean, are their kids capable of self-imposing limits? Part of it is that, you got to start teaching this stuff very young. And otherwise, you're intervening at an age like, Katie's, where, frankly, Katie, I don't want to speak for you, but if you're like my teenager, you want me to butt out of your life. And, you're getting independent at that point. So teaching things younger... Teaching limits. I mean, my son knows he's got an hour that he's allowed to do a game online or this thing, so that they develop the habit of knowing where the off switch is, internal off switch, because it is absolutely addicting. Mm-hmm. The games are built to be addicting and to keep going. The AIM, which is the, instant messaging online, that just stays on throughout all homework. And so when someone pops in to say, hey, did you hear what so-and-so did? Hello, goodbye history. you're completely riveted on what's going on. So parents respond in reaction to how their kids are using it. But frankly, most parents aren't like you, Steve. They don't have the computer in a central place by the time the kids are in high school.
Thank you. That's what Kate tells me that all the time.
Every day. Well, way to go, Dad.
Everybody else has their own.
Well, unfortunately or fortunately, depending on, how you feel about these things, most kids at that point have computers in their own rooms. It's gotten so cheap. The media is getting so portable, so cheap, so personal, that you can, just use it right in your room on a wireless.
Well, Steve, was this a struggle? It sounds like you've come to some kind of understanding about all of this, but I'm guessing there could have been a bloody battle at first.
There was initially, and it was, as was suggested, much of it was around instant messaging. We were seeing 7 and 8 friends at a time.
Yeah.
And it was, as you mentioned, it was becoming addictive, and we needed to really work out a strategy that was acceptable to everyone.
Katie, it's clear that you've figured out that this is, at one level, a kind of a problem. It's taking up too much time. It's addictive. Words like that have come up a couple of times. How about your friends? Did they have a sense that this could be a problem for them?
I think it happens, not to generalize an age group, but a lot of freshmen that I know will become very into it and just very in-depth. They'll be like, well, let me print out this instant messenger conversation and let me show you how mean she was to me. Mm-hmm. And, well, did you check my comment on MySpace? Did you see what she said? And it gets intense. Like, I'm not going to lie, I did it too when I was younger. Just getting in the real brutal fights, because you don't know what someone's really saying I mean, honestly, you don't even know who's typing it. Like, right. They could be on their friend's screen name and saying something to you. You have no idea. And it just, you can get really caught up in it. But I think the main thing to keep in mind, it's just the internet is like the real world just compressed into a little box. And the same rules that apply to the real world apply to the internet. You know, you don't talk to strangers. If someone's being mean to you, you block them. You know, if someone's kind of weird and kind of sketchy, you don't talk to them. It's just you have to grow up with it and you have to make a little mistake to, you know, progress in it.
Still, I'm wondering if your peers, if the kids that you're going to school with have that idea. Do they believe what you believe, or are you kind of a lone wolf when it comes to those understandings?
I think it's both.
Yeah?
I think it's a understood rule. It's kind of immature to get into MySpace fights, but we all do it anyway.
Right.
It's understood that it's not safe to talk to weird people, but some people still do it. It's just, it's different levels for different people.
Liz, what about the you talked about treating this like we treat anything else. When we raise our children, we teach them about things. So if they're going to drive, we teach them how to drive. But the difference there is we all know how to use a car. That was sort of our technology. To what extent do we have to become as bright as them with the technology to do the teaching?
Well, you know, here's the dirty little secret. It's not rocket science. And one of the great things that we recommend is to embrace this world and indeed have your kid be your tour guide. Have your kid show you their MySpace, or if they don't want to show you theirs, a friend of theirs. Have them instant message.
Well, that would be a clue, wouldn't it? Okay.
Well, you know, here's the deal, though. I mean, Katie's absolutely right when she called it, you know, reality in a box. I mean, kids love drama, and this is a great stage for drama.
Indeed.
And also, age-appropriate-wise, I mean, they're trying on personalities. They're testing out where their edges are and what's acceptable socially and what isn't and what's cool and what isn't. This is just a new platform. This is nothing different than what happened in the mall 10 years ago or the playground 20 years ago or the streets 30 years ago. It's just a different forum.
And let's assume let's assume that adolescents always needed some kind of personal space to find out who they are, to establish their identity over and apart from their parents and all of that. And they had it and they got to play, but there were certain limits just because you were limited by geography. Now that geography isn't the issue anymore, are there dangers that are sort of supernatural because of what this box can deliver that the playground or the neighborhood couldn't when kids were investigating their personalities, their identities?
Yes, there are, but there. Let's be clear, there have always been dangers. I mean, when a kid was testing out drinking and then got in a car and drove, bad things happened. If you put a picture of yourself drinking a Budweiser up on MySpace, no one's going to crash the car. However, there are different dangers. You are now basically putting anything personal about yourself on a billboard at the busiest intersection of the city in which you live, except it isn't just the city, it's the country or the world in which you live. And you really have to know that there is nothing private, even if you think you're being private, on the internet. What's there can be downloaded, can be found by anyone who has the will. They have the way.
So there's certainly a question of personal safety that's part of this. But what about some of the other issues? And Katie, you got into it a little bit, these spats in terms of your emotional development, whether they carry over and whether you can really do your homework while you've got four chats going on.
You can't. I tried to convince myself I could numerous times, and you can't. You know, like you'll be typing something on the computer and you'll say, oh, I'll just put on MySpace to listen to someone's song. And you're not doing your homework. You're listening to that or you're talking to other people. It's just, it's addictive. That's the one thing I can say.
Steve, was this a problem for you? Because I can imagine if you're a modern and an intelligent father, you're trying to think, well, look, this is new technology. I don't want to be a Luddite about this. I want to be part of it. But on the other hand, we've got to figure out a way to restrict this. And you're restricting a thing that really you're not that familiar with. How did you come to figure out what to do?
It was trial and error, probably more error than trial. And for us...
Katie's nodding.
Yeah, and I was thinking about what you said about how intelligent I am. There were two things that we really saw, and it had less to do with what was on the internet, but it was more about Kate. And one was that we saw that she was becoming emotionally drained from the overuse. And secondly, it was taking time away from us. That's one reason why we keep it in the kitchen. She was away, totally immersed in what she was doing, but my wife and I were not able to find her, really engage with her. And those were a couple of the signals for us that we needed to make some changes.
Liz, how much do you hear from parents that they really that they have to have a TV in their kids' room? Everybody's got one, and they need a cell phone, and they should be able to do this. All of which gets to what Steve just said, which is that, you know, kids can really now become atomized, really apart from the family in ways that we just couldn't before so easily.
Well, interestingly enough, the numbers really bear this out. I mean, kids engage in media 6.5 hours a day on average, as opposed to 2.25 hours a day with parents and 1.5 hours physically active. So, you know, basically, goodbye, parents. You know, I'm going to go immerse myself in this media world. And, you know, you do have to intervene. Katie, I don't know if you guys have family dinners, but your SAT scores are going to be higher if you do. I mean, there is all sorts of research going on now. 50 points.
That's what I like to hear.
Does it matter what you eat?
That's a whole other discussion. But it turns out it pays to hang out with your parents, you know, a little bit, you know, if nothing else, to have a good face-to-face fight instead of one over the internet with your friends. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it really does matter spending time with parents. But, you know, media is outgunning the parents on a 3-to-1 basis.
877-962-9862 if you want to join our conversation today about teens and the internet. Kathy's on the line from Apex. Hi, Kathy.
Hi, great program. I have a couple of comments. First of all, I do have a high school son, and like Steve, we have the password, so he needs to get that from us. But on one occasion, my husband actually accidentally typed it into the username, so my son found out what it was. And after that, I kept seeing this toolbar that had things like pharmacy, gambling, adult, blah, blah, blah. And I didn't click on it because I thought, well, you can't get anything on that unless you pay for it. Boy, was I wrong. Mm. You can see all kinds of things that I was absolutely, I mean, it was hardcore porn. Mm. And I was absolutely shocked that you could get that so easily. And when I called my internet company, they said, yes, all you have to do is type in a word like nude, and all this stuff will come up, and we couldn't even figure out how to get it off the toolbar after that without the help of the internet company. So I guess my point is that I'm wanting other people to know it's available to kids much easier than you think.
Kathy, can I ask you what you did when you found out?
Yeah, I freaked out.
Yeah.
Yes, I confronted him, and he said, yes, Dad typed the password in the wrong space one time, and I found out about it. And, you know, so we had to have a real long conversation about the appropriateness of that and that, you know, nice girls didn't take pictures like this and stuff like that, and it wasn't realistic, and it was wrong and inappropriate and all that kind of stuff. And interestingly, the way I actually found out about it was my other son was on the computer. He's only 11, and rebooted it, and the printer spit out something, and it was these horrible pictures.
No.
And he brought it to me and said, Mom, these came out of the computer.
All right. Well, so, Kathy, thank you for your call.
Thank you.
877-962-9862 if you want to join our conversation. And I guess that is part of the problem too, Liz, that these are difficult conversations to have, and maybe parents are avoiding all of that, because if you talk about restrictions, you have to explain why. No parent wants to get into that.
Well, that's it. That's part of it. And part of it is no one wants their 11-year-old son confronted with hardcore pornography. You know, let's do our homework and look at porn pictures. It's really a bad afternoon at home. And, you know, you are exposed to things prematurely on the internet if you don't have blocks and filters. Kathy, you know, you really can filter and block a lot of this stuff out. It's built right into your computer, and your internet service provider also has blocks and filters. You can investigate those under preferences under your computer. But you can also check the history of where your kids have been roaming by just, you know, going into the history section. You'll find it on any computer. So you can see the URL, the addresses, that's called the URL of where somebody has been. You know, you do have to have these conversations with kids that you really would rather not have at a certain age sometimes.
And maybe a little bit earlier, yeah. Yeah, we're talking today about family internet policies with father and daughter duo Steve and Katie Marshall and Liz Perley, editor-in-chief of Common Sense Media. And we're taking your phone calls at 877-962-9862. SOT@WUNC.org is our email address. This is The State of Things. Our conversation continues. Stay with us. This is the State of Things. I'm Frank Stacio, talking this hour about the MySpace generation and how tech savviness is somewhat scary to parents. Steve Marshall is with me in the studio. He's the father of Katie Marshall, a junior at Green Hope High School, and she's here in the studio as well. Liz Perley is editor-in-chief of Common Sense Media, and she's in a studio in San Francisco. And you're on the phone at 877-962-9862, or you can send us one of them high-tech emails at sot@wunc.org. Do you worry about your teenager's tech activity? Do you limit the use of computer and text messaging, and why? We're taking your calls. So, Katie, you're apparently getting text messages now while you're on the show.
Right now, my newspaper class says I'm doing well, so I'm taking that as a good sign.
That's good. There is a real upside to all this. I mean, isn't there? There the fact that you are in communication and we can do a lot more. There's Wikipedia. There's Google. You know. Mm-hmm.
There's good stuff too to MySpace. There's this cool thing called bulletins. Everyone who is your friend can see it. And so if you have a club that you want to announce or you have a real dire question, like how do I do my hair for prom, you can get responses for that from everyone.
Good.
And or what's really annoying is people do those really dumb forwards, like send this or die. And those are annoying, but it's good. There's good stuff to it.
And I guess we didn't talk too much about text messaging and the fact that you've got a cell phone. So, Steve, you've got control of the computer. There's one internet connection. It's in the kitchen. You have the password.
Exactly.
But then a lot can go on through the cell phone as well, all hours of the day and night.
It's true. The first time we became aware of significance in text messaging was the bill at the end of the month.
Uh-huh.
So we increased, I think, from 1,000 to 2,000 text messages a month.
Wow.
We don't like to talk about that.
Wow.
Okay, I'm sorry. That's off the table for discussion. And so we have some limits in the evening about when and how long and during what periods, because there's a distraction aspect to it. Particularly during studies.
Do you take Katie's cell phone overnight?
Yes.
You do. How did you feel about that, Katie?
It's kind of rough at first, but I also like to sleep, so there's some upsides to it. you know, I can't get those really cool 3 a.m. phone calls from people, but I also am well rested for the next day.
At what point in this conversation, Katie, did you say to your dad, "You don't trust me"? You said that? Is that part of it?
I don't think I ever said that because I didn't want to get the response back.
Well, that is the issue, Liz. Don't a lot of parents find themselves in this bind that they're in effect saying to their kids, "You don't trust me," or that they don't trust them, and are parents having a hard time with that in controlling their access to internet?
Well, the fact of the matter is that the parents don't trust them. And
right.
Usually it's because kids don't have, you know, it's a kid in a candy store kind of thing. I have the same thing with my daughter. But, you know, our family philosophy is our family's philosophy. Every family has a different one from, you know, let me take your cell phone so you can get a good night's rest to, you know, the horse is out of the barn. I better teach you how to ride. You know,
mm-hmm.
Your cell phone's here. Yeah. I got to teach you that this little button here turns it off at night.
Right. It's so under my pillow.
This is amazing technology. Off.
Liz, our family philosophy is trust but verify.
That
yeah.
sounds pretty good. Well,
yeah.
ours was
That's
a lot
That's a very
easier.
Good one, actually.
Yeah, I said.
And,
you're...
you know, indeed, we build credits, you know, as our kids start to use it more responsibly. What our job is as parents is to make sure that our kids can operate without us.
Right.
So it is our job to teach them responsible behavior, but everyone goes at a different pace.
And how do I build you into a trustworthy or help guide you to become trustworthy? Because when my daughter said that to me at age 13, I said, "You're 13, I'd be crazy to trust you." No, I don't trust you. I'm 35. Marty's on the line from Franklin County. Hi, Marty.
Hi, how are you this afternoon?
We're fine.
It's an interesting use of the word trust. I trust my daughter because she doesn't lie to me. I do not, however, trust a 14-year-old's judgment.
Nah, there we go.
She does not have an internet computer. She does not use the internet at home. It annoys me no end that she gets assignments from school that specifically instruct her to utilize the internet.
Hmm.
Research on the internet needs to be restricted to people who understand how to do research. My wife and I are both RNs and have gone through college-based programs that have taught how to do it in a library first. We have the tools to teach research in every school. If we trashed the computers in the schools and actually got back to educating, and rote memory is part of that, though some people don't seem to think so, we would save on all the pollution of producing the plastics to make the computers and actually get our kids to open a book and read it and understand it and absorb the information so they could use it later.
Marty, thank you. And Steve and Katie are in the studio nodding vigorously and pointing at each other.
I worked at a library. I'm all about books.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I agree in a lot of ways. But our school does really restrict it. You can't get onto MySpace and you can't get onto Instant Messenger from the computers at school. And also, at the beginning of the year, they send out a paper to parents that says, do you agree to allow your children or a child to use the internet? And the parent has to sign it. So
the teachers might be aware of the fact that you don't have permission to use
it
when they give an assignment.
Yeah, if you don't have permission, you can't use it.
Did you have any training on using the internet to do research in school?
Fifth grade-ish.
Okay. Things have changed since then.
A little bit. Yeah. I think now they just assume that you know how to use it already.
Liz, what did you make of that call, Marty's call? I mean, it sounded to me like he was saying, well, we really don't know how to use it well enough, so this whole technology argument, the fact that there are all these upsides, is really inflated.
Well, you know, what's interesting is that Marty's argument may be right for this time or place, but it's, you know, looking out over the future. If we don't get with the program and start teaching media literacy and media tools to our kids, we're giving them fancy cars and no way to drive them. Because this is going to be the interchange of the future. It's not going to change. And if we don't teach our kids how to responsibly navigate, how to get information, how to question the information they see on the internet, because, you know, not everything posted on the internet is true.
Right.
How to understand where to go and how to search safely, then we're not doing our kids any favors. We're just really not educating them. And we need to look at our whole way of educating kids. Frankly, my daughter is never going to do differential equations again, but she sure is going to need to know how to research something on the internet.
Let's go to the phones now. Michael is on the line from Lillington. Hi, Michael.
Hi. I just wanted to give just a different spin on some of this information. I'm a communication professor. I also have a teenage daughter who likes to do the same things that we're talking about today. But we know that with every iteration of technology, we tend to think that this is an advancement, an improvement, and we're going to have actually more communication, which we do. It's just not much depth. And we know that even back a couple hundred years ago, perhaps, Thoreau said something like, we have Maine with a telegraph to California, but it may be that Maine doesn't have much to say to California. So we tend to have a lot of communication, but the depth and level is still pretty superficial. And I think most of those MySpace IM conversations are, yeah, how you doing? How many times have you been on the beach and somebody's on a cell phone saying, hey, I'm at the beach.
Those are mass texts actually sent them to everyone.
Consequence.
So, thank you very much for that,
you're
Michael.
Welcome.
And it really does get to the question of sort of how we develop even our own sense of ourselves. If you're having to negotiate with other people, even if it's over the one telephone or one internet, site or computer in the house, that builds a kind of communication skill that I guess you can't have with just a kind of a slam fest on your text messaging. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I just, you can't push a little sarcasm button before you say something online. So if you just say something as a joke, someone can take you seriously and it gets rough. It's rough.
877-962-9862. If you want to join our conversation, we're talking about using the internet and especially with high school kids as part of our series on high schools. Jody is on the line from Florida. Hi, Jody.
Yes, hi. Thank you for taking my question. This is in regards to the MySpace.com. I have four children at home, and my husband and I do limit their intake on the computer. My concern is my 16-year-old does participate in MySpace.com, and is there any way as a parent for you to go in and look at your children's profile to make sure that they are following the rules? Not to say I don't trust my daughter, but I just want to keep her safety to say, you know, to indicate and point out things that shouldn't be on there, just in case there are.
Okay, Jody. Liz?
This is the great question. I do these drive-bys all the time. Obviously, the easiest thing to do, Jody, is to ask your child to see it. If your child is a little resistant to that, there are other ways. You can type in their school. You can type in their friends' names. Katie, stop me if I'm giving away trade secrets here. My way of dealing with this was I actually made a MySpace page for our dog and then sent it out to my daughter, who thought it was so cute that she then sent it to all her friends. So I now have all their screen names and know exactly who they are and can check on them periodically. And the only time I've ever asked her to take something down is when I saw her sitting there She had some pictures of Corona bottles with the word yum. I said, number one, you don't drink. Number two, you know, you're going to be a counselor in training at camp this summer. Do you really think that the parents of these children want to see alcohol on their counselor in training's MySpace page? So I started to point out the repercussions of it. I do periodically check up on these things, and I urge parents actually with kids to quietly check up, because it's better to ask your kid directly. But you should know what's on there, if only to help guide them to safe and responsible behavior, not with the aim of censoring.
Steve, did you find yourself having to sort of bone up and figure out how this stuff works?
Absolutely. And it was, as Liz mentioned, it was mostly with Kate's help, showing showing me her page, photograph, and so on.
You talk about the fox guarding the hen house, though.
Yeah. To a certain extent.
But this is where the trust comes in.
Yeah, that's where the trust is.
That's exactly
where the bond
is. And what it does is, as you suggested, Liz, it begins the conversation. So we're both talking about something that's of interest to Kate, and we just make it an ongoing conversation.
In a lot of ways, then, Liz, it sounds like a real opportunity. Once you, as you suggested earlier in the program, embrace this technology, it's a real portal for parents to begin these conversations about the important and difficult parts of growing up.
It absolutely is. You know, we're all so willing to go to our kids' baseball games and soccer games when they're young. This is what they do when they're older. So why wouldn't we be willing to visit them on their own turf here, too? It's a reciprocal process, and if not, and we'll learn something and get good time with our kids.
Let's go to Durham. Joe is on the line. Hello, Joe.
Hi there.
You have a question for us or an observation?
Well, an observation, I guess. My sister-in-law is 11 years old, or was 11 years old at the time this happened. She was doing these chat room things, these IRC chat rooms. And her parents, my in-laws, noticed that she was starting to behave a little furtively, that she would close things when they came into the room and such. And since I worked with computers for a living, they asked me to see what she was up to. So I installed a keylogger, and surprise, surprise, she was engaging in some rather explicit conversation.
Hmm. And what was it? Describe briefly the keylogger. What did that do?
Well, it keeps a record of what she types, basically, and the one I installed was specifically targeting the communication on that channel. I won't get into too much technical detail for you there, but basically it was just recording her conversations.
Right. And she didn't know that was happening, but her parents had access to it then,
yep,
your log.
Got it.
Is that a pretty difficult thing to get a hold of? I mean, is that something, I assume you're a programmer, so you developed it directly, you developed it for your sister-in-law?
No, I'm not a programmer.
Oh, you're not?
No.
So is this commercially available?
Yep, yep. You can pretty much find them for free online. Now, the only thing is those toolbars that were mentioned earlier, anytime you're downloading from a porn site, you're likely to get something like that. The same applies to free software, so just be careful of everything that you're searching for.
Oh, yeah, when you download it.
There.
Thank you, Joe.
Sure.
Liz, are there other tips or other things that you can advise parents to look for online to help them keep track?
Well, I do want to say I'm really glad Joe brought up chat rooms, because this is where the creeps hang out.
Mm-hmm.
And chat rooms are thematic. And so if your kid sees something in a list of things called sexisus.com, you know, sexrus or whatever, they're going to go there and they're going to test things out. And this is one out of every five kids is sexually solicited online. That's
one
a hard and true fact.
Oh,
yes.
My gosh.
And now the good news is a lot of these people are just lazy. They're sitting in their home, and if you instruct your kid to tell them to buzz off, they're going to go in search of easier, you know, lower hanging fruit to pluck. They're not going to keep bugging you. But that is true. And they hang out in these chat rooms, and chat rooms, I'll tell you, should not be, kids shouldn't use them. Number one, full stop. That said, you still have to have the conversation with your kid about, it's like stranger danger. It's the chat room conversation. These things are thematic. You can tell where they are. The kids go there because it's a way of testing the limits without ever leaving their own home, and they can have, you know, anonymous computer bravery. But this is where they hang out.
Katie,
and also online with these gaming chat rooms. Online games have chat rooms too.
Do you get the sense, I got the sense talking with you earlier, that that your friends get that chat rooms are kind of dangerous places,
yeah,
and that strangers in chat rooms are just, you need to avoid that.
The one thing I can say about it is, if you're going to let your kid have the internet, do not let them go into a chat room. Make it very clear, chat room equal bad. because they're just, I think about the word chat room and I just get the creeps because just whenever you hear about little children or even teenagers getting hurt, it's usually from a chat room. And other stuff progresses from that, like phone numbers and addresses. I mean, if you're going to limit anything, limit that. That's just understood. Chat rooms just aren't even in it.
We've heard about some of these technological ways to sort of keep track, key loggers and other things. But I'm guessing, Katie, that your friends also know ways to get around these things, nanny and all that.
I don't mean to spill any secrets, guys. Someone was talking about the history. I think it was Liz was saying you can check the history of it. You can also clear the history. I learned that from someone talking about it in conversation, so I wouldn't depend fully on that.
Thanks, Kate.
I'm not trying to sell myself out. Like, if I were doing this, I wouldn't be admitting this, but I'm saying that you can do that. What else? You can just, if you're going to do something, you're going to do it for a lot of kids. If you're going to put a picture of you drinking a beer on your MySpace, you're going to do it. If that means making a whole new MySpace and showing your parents a fake one or something. I don't know. Kids are persistent with this stuff like
this. Steve, I've got a feel, though, that having the communication and having started it early, you feel a lot more confident that you'll at least know when this kind of thing's going on.
I do. And as you mentioned, Liz, having a conversation about MySpace is still having a conversation, and it's engagement, and it's giving us a chance to build our trust relationship.
Steve and Katie Marshall, thank you both very much for
being
on this program today. Now you can check all of your text messages
yes.
that you've been getting. I appreciate that. Liz Pearl, Editor-in-Chief of Common Sense Media, thank you for being with us.
My pleasure.
And thank you for listening to The State of Things today. If you have a comment, you can send us an email at sot@wunc.org. You can see our archives at thestateofthings.org. Actually, it's just stateofthings.org. Support for North Carolina Voices Studying High School comes from the Center for Documentary Studies at Duke University and North Carolina Humanities Council, and we are doing it again Monday, May 22nd. State of Things is going to broadcast live from Bay 7 right next door at the American Tobacco Historic District. Our subject will be teaching high school, and we'll have a panel of North Carolina teachers with us, and we invite you, teacher or not, to join the audience and be with us for that live broadcast, a live forum, Monday at noon, Bay 7 at the American Tobacco Historic District right here in Durham. This is North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. I'm Frank Stachow.